Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Okay, Tov, very interesting question from Louis today about the football game against Moldova this evening. Yaakov Turner Stadium, of course, is in Beersheba, the hometown poor Beersheba. But these days, Israel does have quite a number of very, very high quality stadiums. Some people mentioned the Teddy Stadium from Jerusalem. There are, of course, stadiums as well in Netanya and Haifa and, of course, Tel Aviv. So a few to choose from. But what I wanted to really start with, just as a light little story, is this drone initiative test operation that is ongoing in Israel at the moment. It's the third stage of an 8-stage program of testing drones and the use of drones for various activities, particularly delivery of goods within the urban areas. And the current third stage of this program will involve the delivery of sushi to a beach area in Herzliya. And of course, the idea being that, whatever arrives and when it arrives is still good for consumption. So it's not only going to be about sushi, but also about ice cream, which is an interesting one because, of course, it needs to be done pretty quickly. But let's get on to some more serious things that are going to be tested at this stage, including delivery of medications by drones. And, of course, the use of a drone for a fire station. The drone will be located at the charging station, will be activated autonomously given the circumstances, a number of different circumstances coming together, which will activate the drone. 5 companies currently participating in this whole trial, which is really designed to make use of drones for delivery purposes and to obviously be able to get around urban areas that much quicker. Not only medication, but I forgot to add, also delivering donated blood, platelets, and plasma as part of the test at the moment from Magen David Adom Blood Bank, to the Sheba Medical Center in Tel HaShomer to make sure that the method of packaging and flying and the procedures will actually meet health ministry regulations. So a quite, forget the sushi and the ice cream for a moment, a much, much more serious element using a national network of air corridors and a centralized control system to get these drones moving. A very, very interesting exercise.
Very, absolutely incredible. And I find it so fascinating, starting off with ice cream, sushi, and cold beer, things that are obviously very time sensitive. And of course, so very Tel Aviv. Either way, a number of U.S. and Israeli defense companies have suffered cyber attacks, which seem to have been initiated by Iran.
Yeah, I mean, no surprises there. This comes from the Microsoft Threat Intelligence Center. They announced yesterday that Iranian hackers are apparently or have apparently been successful in targeting some U.S. and Israeli defense technology companies. And Microsoft have said that more than 250 Microsoft Office 365 accounts, which are linked to U.S., European, and Israeli government, were hacked through extensive password spraying, which I think means that they've simply used electronic means to try out hundreds of thousands of different possible password combinations, which they can do very, very quickly indeed in microseconds, just try passwords one after the other and effectively just bombard the system with potentially commonly used or well-known passwords that they think might be successful. And apparently quite a number of accounts were successfully hacked like that. Interestingly, though, there are also reports that Persian Gulf ports of entry and global maritime transportation companies with business presence in the Middle East were also targeted. And Microsoft have said that the hacking, in their words, likely supports the national interests of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Some of the companies that were hacked include companies that support U.S. and EU and Israeli government partners producing radars and drone technology and satellite systems, emergency response communication systems, things like that. So I think that this, you know, if we believe what the Microsoft office have to say, then this does seem to trace back to Iran. It seems quite likely that the Iranians would want to be doing something like this. I don't think that this would qualify as being their revenge, sufficient revenge against so many other things that have seemed to have befallen them while they haven't been checking their mezuzahs on time. And so, you know, I think that this is simply just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we may expect from Iran. And we are going to need to check our mezuzahs very regularly too.
Mm-hmm. No question about that. An Israeli-U.S. economist has won the Nobel Prize for Economics. This is incredible.
Yeah, this is a great story. Joshua Angrist, who actually is a U.S.-born economist, made Aliyah to Israel, spent some time lecturing professor at the Hebrew U in Jerusalem, also was participated in some government initiatives, is one of three economists who have been awarded the Nobel Prize for Economics. He has shared it with the two others, one of whom was a half winner, and then Angrist and his partner Guido Imbens. And they are also, they will share the other half. The first half is shared by a Canadian-born economist and David Card. And the interesting thing about the work that they did to win the prize for economics is that the work that they've done is to establish some sort of a laboratory test system within the real life world that we live in order to test out economic theories. And what they've said is that because there is no real laboratory that can be used for testing economic theories, and they've had to establish those laboratories in the real world using so-called natural experiments in order to understand the causal effects of economic policy and other events. So this is the work that Professor Joshua Angrist has been involved with. He is today a professor at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and he has very, very strong links still with the Hebrew U in Jerusalem. He made Aliyah to Israel. He then returned back to the U.S., and he has subsequently spent some time after that here in Israel lecturing and obviously sharing his immense knowledge on the subjects that he is involved with in the economic field. He has a very strong link to Israel, and of course lots of people jumping up, particularly from the Hebrew U and indeed from representatives from various government ministries congratulating him on his prize. I think this qualifies as being another Nobel Prize for an Israeli, given that he is an Israeli citizen, holds an Israeli passport. I believe his wife Mira also is Israeli, and actually she's gone on record as saying that she and her husband are Israelis with every bone in their bodies. That was Angrist's wife Mira describing their relationship with Israel. So mazel tov to Professor Joshua Angrist, and of course to his colleagues who have won the Nobel Prize for Economics.
Just incredible. Absolutely an amazing achievement. The cabinet has approved the appointment of the new head of Shin Bet. What do we know about him?
Well, what we know about him is that we finally know his name.
Okay.
He is Ronen Bar, and he is currently the deputy head of the Shin Bet, and his name has finally been released for publication as the person who will succeed the current head of the Shin Bet, Nadav Argaman, and apparently that succession is due to take place this week, very, very quickly indeed. So in the first instance, we're interested to know who Ronen Bar is. He's had a very auspicious career, both within the IDF. He was a member, he served in the elite Sayeret Matkal unit, which is the same unit that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett also served in. He entered the ranks of the Shin Bet. He's been a field agent. He was the lead he led the operations division. He became the head of the Shin Bet Resource Development Department, and he took over as deputy head of the Shin Bet 3 years ago. He will now move, of course, into the job as the top person at the Shin Bet. Unfortunately, his appointment has raised many other issues which are entirely unrelated to the Shin Bet and to the appointment of the head of the Shin Bet. The Shin Bet, of course, is the organization, the internal security organization, as opposed to the Mossad, which is the external security organization. So the Shin Bet is involved in taking care of all security issues within the boundaries of the State of Israel, and is also responsible for monitoring security issues in the Palestinian Authority area, in the shared areas A, B, and C, as was set down by the Oslo Accords, responsible for that, and also responsible for keeping careful watch on events around Gaza in terms of security coordination. So the Shin Bet has a very substantial role to play in the security of our country. As I mentioned, his appointment has been dogged by some anonymous letters that were written complaining about misconduct on his behalf. And these letters have opened a massive can of worms within Israel about how anonymous complaints should or should not be handled, and whether one should even pay any attention to official complaints that are lodged about a senior individual, but who come anonymously. On the one hand, of course, we have this issue of the possibility that there might be people out there who simply have an axe to grind against that individual and who would do whatever they can in order to prevent their promotion, and will write letters of this sort without any qualms whatsoever, but knowing that it would never be traced back to them because it's all being done anonymously. On the other hand, there are situations when people may wish to lodge an anonymous complaint. It might well be well justified, but for reasons of their own, prefer to remain anonymous, even though the complaint has justification. And of course, we've had another person, the head of the Minister of Internal Security, Elazar Stern, who formerly served as the head of the IDF manpower unit, and in that role was responsible for receiving all complaints by IDF soldiers against senior superiors, against other people, all types of complaints. And he went on the record, or perhaps a slip of the tongue, a little earlier in the last little while, saying that when he was the head of the manpower unit of the IDF, all anonymous complaints were shredded. That was what he said, in order to try to support the notion that there are so many people who come up with anonymous complaints in order simply just to block the path of promotion of another person or bring their name into disrepute, rather than to lodge a very serious, justified complaint in an anonymous way. I don't know what listeners think about this. It's a very, very big issue. Many women in particular have jumped up to say where sexual harassment complaints are concerned, those are more likely to come anonymously, and therefore they shouldn't simply be ignored, because people do have the right to lodge a complaint like this in an anonymous fashion. We all know that there have been cases when sexual harassment complaints have been lodged anonymously without foundation and have subsequently been proved to be fabricated, just in simply in order to bring someone's name into disrepute. And it's potentially quite an easy thing to say, well, he tried to sexually harass me. It's my word against his word. I don't really know what the answer to this particular conundrum is. It's a very, very difficult situation. In the end, however, on back to the original story, Ronen Bar seems to have overcome these anonymous complaints that were lodged against him, and he will now become the head of the Mossad later this week. Oh, not the Mossad, sorry, the Shin Bet.